This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham and Rod Mullins. We're going to talk some NASCAR as we recap Talladega and Chase Elliott's big win. Wow, and then, you know, a lot of theatrics on the last lap, Rod. Take us through what it was a good race and a thrilling finish at Dega.
Well, I'll tell you, I couldn't say anything better about this race than what happened on Sunday afternoon down at Talladega. It's probably one of the best Talladega races that I've watched. We didn't see the carnage, the mass carnage. We did see the big ones, but we didn't see the carnage going constantly out. You know, we saw most of that carnage really taking place there toward the end of the race, but we saw some great racing between these drivers who were really hungry to, you know, get their car out there in front, work together. But I think the big thing that really stood out of this whole race weekend was the meeting by the Chevrolet drivers and the Chevrolet owner, so to speak, the car owner. And they got together and they said, we have to work together in order to be able to pull off a big win this weekend. And that's exactly what the Chevrolet owner did. All the cars agreed to work together. And it definitely proved to be a big effort for Hendrick Motorsport when they came up with the win with Chase Elliott. Then you also had Alex Bowman with his highest top five finish of his career. So all together, all in all, I think everybody has been talking about this past weekend. They said it was a big shot in the arm for NASCAR, considering the fact that this was no restrictor plate racing. There was no restrictor plates on these cars. These cars were as natural as they could be almost, you know, 30 years ago before the restrictor plate put on these cars. And so it was a big victory for NASCAR in that respect because we had a lot of close running between the cars. We had a lot of lead changes. Then you had it's a big win for Hendrick Motorsport because they needed a win here for several races, even going back into the 2018 season. And it was an even bigger shot for Talladega because Talladega announced this morning, if I'm not mistaken, that they had in attendance at least 80 to 90,000 people there staying at Talladega Super Speedway. Now, TV rating kind of flat. They stayed the same from the last report that I saw, but the fans were definitely entertained to the way that NASCAR used to run on the circuit. And hey, a legend, you know, a son of a legend won. Chase Elliott won there at the very end. When the Gala came out on that final lap and that big wreck happened, and we saw Chris Buescher and some of the other drivers get tangled up, Kyle Larson took a big trip right down there in the infield, and he went airborne. He split several times, and he came out of the wreck pretty good. So all in all, it was a great Talladega weekend.
Yeah, that was a Talladega Nights-like flip from Kyle Larson. We're going to talk about that next. That flip, it was scary. I mean, we've seen worse, but not much worse, I guess. And you know, my first thought was, okay, yeah, he flipped, and that's, you know, he loses contact with the ground, he flips. He even said afterwards it was something along the lines of it was the most flips he's ever experienced in a car. But so also there were positive things. I mean, the safer barriers held up. We didn't see, you know, anything flying to the crowd. And of course, this was up against the fence, on the other side of the track, not against the stands. But I mean, as bad as that was, you know, he walks away, nobody's hurt, in the crowd, you know, everybody lives a tale to tell. So as scary as that was, and as much attention as that got after the race, it could have been a lot worse.
Yeah, it could have been a lot worse. But, you know, Kyle Larson, one thing about it preaches it over and over to the safety of these cars and what NASCAR has put into these cars, and also that safer barrier. I think that safer barrier has been one of the greatest inventions that NASCAR had the University of Nebraska work on, to where they could come up with such a great solution to just stop that energy. But even though Kyle Larson hit that wall, still there was a lot of that, I call it pent up, almost like a kinetic energy, so to speak. And the car didn't get into some kind of, I call it a death spiral, so to speak. Mm-hmm. When they get airborne and the flaps open up, this car still stayed low to the ground, but it had a lot of energy in it to keep that car low on the ground. And so when Kyle Larson finally did land, he landed with a resounding thud because it was going to shake him up, definitely. But one of the first things he said when they came and they got him and hauled him into the ambulance, take him to the infield care center, one of the things he said, I'm okay, I'm doing okay, I'm fine. And he was. He was okay. He came out of it. And I'm sure it shook him up a little bit, but, you know, every race car driver has been through some sort of wreck before. Maybe not as bad as what Carl Edwards was several years ago when he was just turning end over end when he was there at Talladega. But it was still, it was a good wreck, so to speak, but it wasn't a very bad wreck that ended up costing Kyle Larson an injury or someone else out on the track or in sin for that matter.
You know, it really puts in perspective. Think about, you know, I had a long trip this past weekend. We went to the Virginia Beach, a music festival in Virginia Beach, and you're on the road a lot, and, you know, when your mind starts to wander, you know, you're going down the road 70, 80 miles an hour, and there's potential, obviously, for car accidents and that kind of thing. I mean, these cars are going 180, 190, 200 miles per hour, and it speaks to the safety of NASCAR, both the cars, the mechanisms inside the car, the integrity of the vehicles themselves, and then the safer barriers and the fences and everything else. It speaks to the just everything that is thought into everything that goes into a race, how a race an accident like that can happen, and the guy can say I'm okay and walk away from it. It really emphasizes how safe NASCAR racing is.
Yeah, and it also demonstrates, too, and I think it does early on with the race with Bubba Wallace. When Bubba Wallace got collected and ended up hitting and going into one of the cars there on his right, going into the wall, I think that also demonstrated, too, how fast this racing service can change at 180, 190, and 200 miles an hour. They tell you constantly, you know, even in your driver's head courses and the way that things are, always be prepared for something. Always keep your eye out. Be so many seconds ahead. These guys are having seconds shaved off to where it's maybe a half a second or a quarter of a second, maybe not even that much. And they're trying to make moves, and they're trying to the old thing is thread the needle, so to speak, and get into a hole and hold that place to where they can at least draft and pull each other around the track. And Bubba Wallace didn't have that advantage on Sunday afternoon. He ended up getting out of that draft, and when he did, he tried to slip into a hole. And when he did, all of a sudden, somebody just in between him either got a little bit of a nudge on him or the air got off of him, and then boom, he takes off and he goes into another direction. And he said, I messed up. I was just trying to make something happen, and it didn't happen. But, you know, that just goes to show you that you have to think with almost a split-second accuracy when you're out there on that track. Bubba Wallace is an example of that on Sunday afternoon, as well as the other drivers trying to avoid that wreck early on in the race.
We'll talk about Dover and the Monster Mile when we start wrapping up the podcast, but I wanted to bring in, we're recording this podcast for our listeners out there. It's Wednesday afternoon, just before 5 o'clock. Less than a half hour ago, actually, about a half hour ago, story coming across the news wires that we should be dropping in here. Now, the headline says NASCAR drops group qualifying for single car runs. And, Ron, I want to read you the lead to the story from the Associated Press because I just love the lead to this. NASCAR has dropped its fight to add excitement value to qualifying and will return to single car laps after the current format became a laughingstock. We've been talking about this for a few weeks off and on, Rod. I want to get your reaction to this news and also to that turn of phrase there by the AP writer.
I love it. I love it. It was a laughingstock. I mean, it was one of these things that who was going to go out on the track and who was actually going to start, you know, trying to put some laps up on the track and get some times in. But everybody was just kind of sitting in the pits and they didn't want to do anything. They just wanted to sit there and think, all right, you make your move first and let's see who's going to go out. Let's see what happens. But we'll sit on our feet. And I have to say this, I don't want to hear Kevin Harvick and I don't want to hear some of the other drivers who were so much against this single car qualifying thing get on TV by this weekend and start saying, oh, you know, look what happened and everything. They did it to themselves. It's not anybody else that can be blamed for this. NASCAR was the one that wanted to go with this group qualifying thing, and it worked before and so the other track. But these drivers had found little ways, and these car owners and also the crew chiefs had found these little ways in order for them, if they held back just a little bit, well, we can kind of move somebody up and kind of get them where they need to be at. Kevin Harvick was one of those drivers that came out and he said, if they go back to the single qualifying effort, it's going to ruin the sport. I don't think it's going to ruin the sport, but Kevin Harvick and some of the other car drivers out there for NASCAR need to be aware that if you're going to try to play with the rules and you're going to try to, you know, at least do some kind of trick some people out of some things, you're going to get what's coming to you. And sure enough, I mean, they've done this on the cheating part. We've talked about that before. Are they getting tougher when it comes to cheating? Yes, they are. Are they getting tougher when it comes to this thing of qualifying? Yes, they are. They're not going to hold anything back now. And that's what Corey finally said. If that's the way you're going to be about it, we're just going to go ahead and go back single format by going out there and qualifying, and we'll teach you a lesson before it's over. And then when you're ready to go back and decide that you're going to race out there like racing men should, that's what will happen. But it has been made a laughing stock, no doubt about that.
And it was all done for TV. Fox and NBC wanted to have something interesting to show during when they had to show qualifying on their second-tier channels when the qualifying was going on. But, you know, if you're just doing this to make it interesting for TV and the complaint is, well, qualifying is boring. Well, they don't show football practice before the Super Bowl. You know, and we're both writers. You cover a lot more NASCAR than I do. But having covered NASCAR weekends, you know, from a writer's standpoint, qualifying day is the best time to walk around the garage. You talk to crew chiefs, engineers, you talk to the drivers. And so what if it's boring on TV? It's not supposed to be exciting. It's just part of the process. The exciting stuff is the racing action. You have two or three races a weekend. That's where the excitement is. And so the idea that NBC and Fox push this silly system on us, thank God it's over with.
Yeah, and you're right. NASCAR realizes this thing too. Of here it is. You know, you've got these two big networks that signed for bookings of money to have this racing contract through, you know, 2020, 2025, whatever the deal is with NBC and whatever the deal is with Fox. But you know, they have started nitpicking now. I think it's just little things, and the fans have started nitpicking and so forth. And I'm going back to this. You know, some of these fans really like the single car qualifying thing because it makes that driver, he's got no other obstacle out there on that board whatsoever or on that track, be able to make that run and just do so well at it and push that car as far as they can go. Now on the second point that I was going to make too, you know, this nitpicking that's been going on, it's already going to cost us Darrell Walker. And I'm coming back to the man's defense again. And I used to, again, I disliked the man at first because I thought he was too much, you know, the hick part of this whole racing thing, but he's that last little thing that we've got of what NASCAR was at least 30 or 35 years ago, and he sees it from a different perspective as what we do. NASCAR sees this whole qualifying effort of going back to the single car qualifying as a chance to kind of regain some glory that they've lost by going to this group format that Fox and NBC have, you know, kind of pushed because of money, advertisers, racing attention and so forth. I think that's going to be a big deal. I think going back to that single qualifying thing, it makes it more exciting. Who's going to be on the bubble right at that very end instead of having three time trials of qualifying that's out there on the track? I think this is going to really push some teams to be much better. And will we see the cheating thing come back into it again? We probably will, like what happened with Austin Dillon this past weekend. Austin Dillon, his car was fined this past weekend from Talladega. His crew chief is going to be sitting out of the race. I forget how many $1,000s that Richard Childress Racing will be fined. All because in the spoiler back there in the back, they found Bondo. And that made all the difference in the world. And now Austin Dillon suffering a little bit of a setback this past weekend. So is his crew chief going in.
One other thing I wanted to add in before we start talking about Dover and this weekend, Rod. Dale Earnhardt Jr., some news regarding Dale. He's going to be working his first Kentucky Derby this weekend. Part of his growing role with NBC Sports. He's also supposed to do the Indy 500 later this month. And I'm looking at this, Rod. I wanted to get your thoughts. I'm looking at this as a very big positive for NASCAR. When you see now, I know last year there was some controversy gemmed up by some hockey fans when Dale Jr. was used on an NBC hockey broadcast, playoff hockey broadcast. But, you know, I look at this and say, here's the most recognizable face of NASCAR, has been for a long time, and now he's transitioned to the booth. He's pretty good in the booth, to say the least, on NASCAR broadcast. Now, yeah, it's a different thing, and I'm even reading a story where Dale Jr. acknowledges, hey, I'm in their world. When I go to the Kentucky Derby, when I go to the Olympics, when I do anything else – I'm on their turf, and I want to respect the rules of the game, and I want to, you know, I want to learn their sport and help them tell their stories. But for NASCAR's perspective, this has got to be a big coup to have, you know, sort of that crossover appeal, reminding people during the Kentucky Derby this weekend, hey, don't forget about NASCAR on Sunday.
Yeah, it keeps that word of mouth out there, that advertising out there about NASCAR. And, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. has admitted, you know, he likes this sort of thing. He likes horse racing. You know, I really expect him. I know this thing sounds crazy, but if it wasn't for the NASCAR schedule running into the fall, we might very well see him on Sunday Night Football, Pal Michael, this college flip. They might even make him a sideline reporter. He wants to cover football so bad, but he can't because NBC is in that fall stretch of all those breaks. Now, the opportunity presented itself that he might do a Monday night game, for example, and NBC had the rights to the Monday night game, he might have a little bit of a better chance with it. But I'm going to tell you something. People are selling Dale Earnhardt Jr. short. You mentioned the thing about the hockey thing when Mike Tirico was interviewing him prior to the Olympics and everything coming up. If people haven't had a chance to listen to Dirty Mo Radio, and that is Dale Earnhardt Jr.'s own little network that he has for podcasting, you need to take a listen to the Dale Jr. Download. And I have been enjoying myself off and on here for the last few days as I've had a chance to listen to interviews with Kirk Schellerdine, also with Richard Childress and some other drivers in there, even some younger drivers. But the one this past week that he really could not control, and the podcast went 2 hours, and he talked about all the thrill of stock car racing to drag racing, was his 2-hour interview with John Force. That was unreal to listen to some of the excerpts of this little interview. He knows what he's talking about, even though he may have not done drag racing down the line. Dale Jr. does a lot of research, and I think we're going to see a lot of research done on for his part when he goes to the Kentucky Derby and he does his broadcast from there. And I would not be surprised that he will talk a lot about it on his Dale Jr. Download on that following Monday when it comes out. I'm sure he's going to have a thrill out of it. Rutledge Wood and him are going to be in the infield. They're going to be going around talking to some of the fans. They're going to be talking to some of the jockeys and different things. He won't be able to talk about aerodynamics and horses and different things like that, how much fuel is going to go into this horse to be able to cross the finish line. But I think he gives the perspective of just one of us, at least, that's never had a chance to maybe see something like this, is going to see one of the greatest spectacles of horse racing this coming weekend.
Yeah, he won't know the particulars of horse racing, but he has some ideas on physics. And it'll be interesting to hear his perspective from the outside looking in, but also with a little bit of knowledge of how racing goes. So let's now get you ready. Dover and the Monster Mile. Rod, get us ready for the weekend.
Well, Dover and the Monster Mile is going to be another big race coming up for these drivers. You've got drivers like Jimmy Johnson, who still, and I've talked about Jimmy Johnson off and on. This would be a great race for him to be able to pick up a win, or at least try to get a win in there, because Jimmy Johnson has done well at Dover before. And for those of you that are not familiar with Dover, it is essentially a concrete Bristol. I mean, you've got high banking, except that this thing is stretched out, and that's the reason why they call it the Monster Mile. You've got a track that is a very unforgiving. Just when you think it's ready to turn what you would think at Bristol, you've got just a little bit more to go, but the turns are a lot sharper as you go into one and two as you're getting around through there. And Dover is located conveniently, of course, it's outside of Washington, D.C. It's over in Delaware. I've had a chance to go by the track before, and they always put on a really great show there. And, of course, the Air Force Base is right there next door. They bring in a lot of people. They bring in some people out of the Northeast, some from New Jersey, some from Philadelphia, of course, down from Pennsylvania and some other points. For them, this is going to be a big race of where at least they can have maybe some kind of a good semblance of a crowd there this weekend. Let's hope that they do, because they're looking for some decent weather, and it's always an iffy thing. If it's cloudy there, if it's rainy, well, we may have a good race, and we may not. Depends on how things go. Jimmy Johnson definitely will be one that's favored. I wouldn't rule out Ryan Blaney either at this point. Ryan Blaney and then also Team Penske have done really well here in the last few races, and can't rule out Kyle Busch. He likes the track as well. Kyle Busch is kind of hungry for a win, too, because if you heard Radioactive from Fox Sports this past weekend, you know, I can't even begin to name all the different curse words that Kyle Busch was using because nobody would draft with him this past weekend at Talladega. Well, he won't have to draft at Dover this weekend, but he'll have to fight for position everywhere that he goes. And so it'll be a big race for all these drivers, and hopefully we'll see another great race like what we did this past weekend at Talladega.
Yeah, looking at the weather, it is iffy. Chance of scattered thunderstorms both days this weekend. Good weather for Friday leading into the weekend, but yeah, so it could be an issue as far as that goes. But hey, we're ready for it now, and we can always just hope that the rain goes away. Maybe goes to Monday. That's all we have to care about. So, well, Rod, thank you for your time, and thanks for getting us ready for the weekend. And we'll talk to you again next week.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.